Well, welcome everybody to a session called Bridging Two Communities. My name is Linda Powell Jensen, and I lived in the mining town between 1951 and 1955. And for those of you who are interested in maybe going back and listening, this session is being recorded and it will be available on the web.
Oh.
So, let you know that in advance. This program presents a history of River Creek Valley and the many parallels between the two communities, Olden Mine and Holden Village. And as you will see, many of the activities that are popular with villagers have also been popular in the mining days. So we'll start off with,
Linda, can you speak up just a little bit when you talk, please?
I'll try.
Thank you.
Okay. Great Northern Railroad came through this valley in 1887, looking for a route for the railroad through the mountains, and they made notations of ore deposits. And there were various prospectors in here. Alright, this is J.H. Holden, and he actually found the ore body in 1896 and filed a claim. And over the next 30 years, various companies were in here digging tunnels, gathering ore samples. They took leases on the mine, and the location was up on Copper Mountain. And if it isn't too dark when I do the program tomorrow night about the mine, we'll actually walk up the road a little ways and try to point out where it was identified. In 1928, Hal Sound or Britannia took a lease on the mine, and in 1930, they bought the mine and started work. And I'll show you. These are early workmen working up in that area, and you can see the conditions were pretty primitive, and notice their heavy clothing. This is a picture of Railroad Creek meandering through the valley. We're not exactly sure where in the valley that picture was taken. We've never been able to identify it, but it does show you that it was a meandering creek. And these are the very first crude bridges that were built across the creek, and they were wide enough for pack animals and people and maybe a pieces of small equipment. And this is what the early road looked like, that basically a path that hauled the equipment up here. When they bought the mine, they started more road building in earnest, and this is located toward the top of the switchbacks. You can see Lake Chelan over here in the corner. So it gives you some idea of where that is, and they started building roads. The Depression came, and so work stopped in 1931, and then they came back and resumed work in 1936 and started building in earnest up on the hillside by the where the portal level, 300 level, was at that time. The mine started operating in 1937, and the first shipment of ore left Lucerne in April of 1938. It was a festive event. See all the people? When it arrived in Chelan, it was greeted with dignitaries and politicians, and they actually had a parade that followed the ore trucks down to the railroad with the first. This was a big economic boom to Central Washington. This is a picture of the early town site, and you can see the layout is pretty much similar to what you see today, a little bit different look, but these are the buildings, and as you mentioned, working in three, they were very well-built buildings, very sturdy. Initially, the company expected to have mostly single miners, which is the main reason they built these nice dorms. And they made them very comfortable, unlike many company towns, mining towns, lumber towns, where they had bunk houses. These guys, as you know, two to a room, very nice rooms. I've been sleeping in one of those beds the last two nights. Some of you probably are too. They had two to a room, and if you've stayed in the older lodges over the years, you've taken advantage of using the sinks because they had their own facilities. So these were considered very nice facilities. They also built the dining hall, which is where the single miners ate their meals. And they had a lunch area that they could pack their lunches back in the corner where the dish pit is now. Now, the meals that were served in those days were very heavy meat, potato, high-calorie meals. Probably still even heavier than what you're seeing right now during the construction years. As those of you, and many of you have been here over the years, you know this is the type of care we get when the village is. And just like during the guest years, they have a hike house bar, just like we had a lunch place, but the cheese and vegetable sandwich and trail mix are a little bit different than what those men used to make lunches to go underground, because they were heavy lunch meat, again, high calorie bread, pastries and such. Agape was our hospital. It had a fully equipped examining room. It had a 4-bed ward. There was also a fully equipped dentist's office, and there was a dentist that came in from Chelan periodically to do dental work. The Agape building wasn't very favorite with us kids. We did not like to go there. Again, the company, in the efforts to keep good workers, they built that, what we call the rec hall, recreation hall. The gymnasium, at the time it was built, was one of the most modern in the state of Washington. And it was multi-purpose. I will have to share a little story with you. When Teg made the comment about in our introduction about the floor having been recently treated and you would die a painful death if you walked on it, in the mining days, you did not walk on that floor unless you had on the special gym shoes. There was one exception, and I'll show you that. And the first time I came back to Holden Village, we started into Vespers, and I stopped because there was no canvas on the floor. In the mining days, when there were activities going on, they had huge sheets of canvas that totally covered the floor, and then they sat up all the folding chairs. And some of you may have been coming here long enough that you sat on those 3 chairs hooked together. Those were left from the mining days, but I remember in the early 2000s, one day at lunch, Diane Shiner says, butts are bigger now. We're going to have a party this afternoon, and we have flyers, and we're taking those chairs apart. Because there wasn't room for 3 people to sit on. That's the point. Basketball was one of the big sports that was popular in the mining days, and teams would come from the outside to play the mining teams, and the miners had various teams, and then of course the kids played. One of the guys visiting at the miners' reunion told me that it was either 38 or 39. The Holden team actually won the Washington State Amateur Basketball Championship. The gym was also where we had all the multiple function activities. Now, this is the one occasion when the floor did not have the canvas, the dances. And the New Year's dance was the big event. And as you can see, it was very much a dress-up affair, the evening gowns, the suits and ties. And I would like to mention to you, Holden was a dry town. You could not purchase alcohol here, and it was never consumed in public. It was available, you could have it in your private space, but at the dances, the picnics, which we'll see later, alcohol was never served. Now, I'm sure there were bottles out in the snowbanks, being what it was. And as a kid, I will tell you, we'll get on the high school here, babysitting on New Year's Eve was big bucks night, because there was such a shortage of babysitters, you would have 3 or 4 families at one house, and everybody paid you. So, and then many of them had parties after the dances.
And these are all miners with their suits on? Will they clean up for you guys?
Oh, look and see the long evening gowns. An orchestra came in from Wenatchee for the New Year's dance.
Wow.
And in the 40s, they had a couple other big dances. The Muckers special with a big ball they had. The community Christmas tree in the years we were here was probably for kids. This was the big community event, very well attended. Every child in the school, grades 1 through 8, got a gift from Santa Claus that was individually picked by the mother's committee for your age and is sex appropriate. And the evening would start with each of the 3 schoolrooms, later to become 4, doing music programs. And of course in those days we could sing all the Christmas carols out of the hymn book. And then Santa would come and give the gifts. Now there was one change that took place in 1952, Washington outlawed casino gambling. And this Christmas was funded by the community club who operate the pool hall. And the slot machines disappeared after casino gambling was outlawed. So after that, the kids in the big room, which we thought was a real bummer, it was our introduction to politics, all we got was a box of applets and collards. We didn't get a nice present anymore. But anyway, we'd have our music program, and then the mothers would help Santa give out the gifts. And this picture will give you an idea of how full the capacity was, because you can see even the balcony was full.
Wow.
This was a, and again, notice everybody's dressed up, suits and ties. One of the things I'd like to emphasize about Holden Mining Village is, or town, it was very much an all-American community, just like any community on the outside. Our houses were nice, they weren't mining shacks, and our traditions, like I said, these things were important, and we were very much an all-American community, and you'll see some more of that. The bowling alley was a very, very important part of the recreation activity. They had both men's and women's leagues, very competitive. The little weekly newspaper always had the standings on the front page, who was in first place. They also had junior bowling for kids 12 years and older. And the pin setters are original, except that the village has now added motors. But in the mining days, some of the younger miners would make extra money, especially the single ones, by setting pins. And when we left here, my brother and I joined a high school bowling league, and we went into Everett, and they had automatic pin setting. And he and I are going like, how come it takes so long to get our ball so we can have our second shot? It was really slow for us compared to what these guys did. So the bowling was very much an important part of kids' life as well as the recreation for the community. The pool hall was very different in the mining days. You had to be 21 years of age to go in there. Now, if your dad wanted to hang on your hand, you could walk through by where the cage is and up the stairs, but otherwise. And as you can see, there was nothing on the walls. The slot machines, when they were there, were over to the space on the right. But the one nice thing left over, the poker table in the back and at the front, poker tables were still going all the time, and the game was going. And they left behind all these wonderful chairs for us to use here. Mm-hmm. That's where your chairs came from, those poker tables. The fountain lunch was much more than ice cream. As you can see, the chairs or the stools went all the way around from door to door. And if you go out the back door, it still says fountain lunch on it, by the way. It's still painted on there. This is the grill. That's where our restaurant, where families went out for dinner and the single men from the dorms would come down. They had steaks, french fries, hamburgers, fish and chips, just like, you know, a small restaurant. Now, the area where the stools and tables are today, that was walled off, and that was just a storage area for supplies. And shortly after I came here, somebody asked me what had been where the lift is, and I didn't know where the lift was, so they showed me. That area is where all the freezers were that stored the meat and ice cream during the mining days. That's where the lift is now. And again, this was a kind of a popular place with the single men to come for steak dinners. And the women who worked in the fountain lunch and in the mess hall, by the way, were also members of the miners' union, and they made very good wages. And I'll tell you a quick personal story about that. When we moved here after my father had passed away up here, my mother signed up for unemployment. She was a 40-year-old widow with four kids. And in Washington, your unemployment pay is based on your earnings. And they were going to make her take a waitress job. Her unemployment check was more than what waitresses made. And so the attorney, our family attorney, intervened, and she was able to collect her unemployment until she could find a higher paying job equal to what she had made up here, which was important for kids. The school started, opened in 1937 with one room, 8 grades in one room. There was always only 8 grades. We never had a high school here. In 1939, the population was growing. It was divided into 2 rooms with grades 1 through 4 and 1 through 8. In 1949, the T was built on the back of the school building. Narnia is the school building. And a third room was added. When the baby boomers hit first grade in 1953, they needed a room all of their own. So the basement was opened up, and a fourth room, they were divided up, and they had a fourth room down there, which they had. This is a picture of what we called the big room, which would have been the upper grades, in taken in the 40s. And then this is a picture of it taken in that same room in the 50s, and that's the room that is toward the rows. Now, the interesting thing when I saw this picture is, we had our little pecking orders, you know, and when you were in the big room, the 8th graders always got to sit by the windows. And the year that they opened the basement, the big room went to the basement, and those 8th graders were really mad because all they had were 2 little windows and a door. But this, I believe, was taken the year of the record snowfall here, the winter 55, 56, because they've got the backs turned to the windows. The windows are totally covered. We received an excellent education. The one teacher that was here 20 years, Florence Field, when they left here, she taught in the Chelan area. She lived to be 101 years old. When the kids left here to Galway High School, we were very well prepared. I left here, I was very disappointed I didn't get to graduate from 8th grade, but my first year on the outside, I was ahead of the kids in almost all subjects. Because she was such a good teacher and very much a disciplinarian. She had a 3-cornered ruler, and I'm telling you, nobody acted up because she cracked that on the desk. You paid attention, and we laughed because when she passed away, they had the memorial service at Fields Point. That was her husband's family property that became Fields Point. And just as it was ending, thunder rolled in the distance, and one of the gals yelled, "Not the 3-cornered ruler!" High school graduation was a big event, eighth grade graduation was a big event. And again, everybody's dressed up. See the corsages and the boutonnieres that the boys have. And I have a personal story here. The young boy on the far right was my older brother, Jim, and he was the class speaker for the graduation. The barber was out of town. My mother borrowed some electric clippers from our neighbor to trim up his hair. So she started trimming the back of his neck, and they shocked her, and she went like this, all the way up the back of his head. So he was instructed to walk forward, give his speech, step backward, and sidestep to his hair. He was not to turn around and let anybody see the back of his head. And again, if I had a picture of the audience, you would see that everybody was in suits and ties. This is the picture of the last day of school in 1957. It's been published multiple times in the Wenatchee World and other newspapers and documents. There were almost 120 kids in the school by the time it closed. And again, I emphasize we got a wonderful education. This is the picture of Honeymoon Heights. And up there is where the early families that came in, the mostly newlyweds, which is how it got its name, in the late 30s. And they didn't really build new homes up there. Most of it was remodeling the various cabins and buildings left behind from the early work years that they'd done. In fact, I read in it was a master's thesis the gal did, an archaeological study. A couple families took one of the small bunkhouses and cut it in half and made a joint doorway and had a duplex out of it. And as I said, it got its name Honeymoon Heights because when the company started operating, they hired a lot of engineers right out of college. Well, they got graduated, they were marrying their sweethearts, and they all came along. In fact, there's a picture that was taken later. Some of the ones came back to the reunion and told us about, there was a pole up there about a year after they started living up there that had a stork on it that swiveled to point to whatever house was in it.
How many houses were up there?
I think there's a plat map, I think there was about 20 somewhere. There were not very many. As soon as the mine started operating, first of all, there were several issues. One was it was very difficult to get to in the winter. And there used to be a small bridge that went across the creek just this side of the ballpark. There also was a tram up there in that area that they could load their groceries on to send up the hill. But the women said, I mean, the one mother, she said, well, it was worthless, she said, because in the winter the thing would slip its gear and dump all the groceries on the snow, and then you had to crawl down the hill and get your groceries out of the snow. She also said as soon as your kids learned to walk, they learned to ski, so they didn't have to pack them. But the other problem was the shaking from the operation of the mine, so it was abandoned pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. This is a picture of Chalet Hill in Wendell, and we called it the circle because it circled the top. And the houses went by position. The company built them for their management employees, and their housing was part of their compensation. The first big one at the bottom was the general manager. The second one, which is small in this picture, but of course burnt down and it's been replaced, it was called the guest house, and that's when company officials from the New York office came out, or mining people from other parts of the world. This was a state-of-the-art mine, and they had people coming to look at the operation, so they stayed in the guest house. The third one was called the staff house, and that was for single management employees. And then from there on up, it went with the, as I said, with the position, and on occasion, if a dad got a promotion, he might move two or three houses down the hill. This is a picture of Winston Camp. There were 101 homes up there.
Wow.
They, as I said, they were very much like what would be built on the outside in those days. They were not shacks. Our home had 90-pine paneling in it, the living room and hallway, like it's in the B Center. There were a couple of log homes up here. People ask, I will show you. My house is located right here. We were on the bottom row. We're under what is where the labyrinth is now, that the drain field. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, somebody asked me a while back about the large two-story cement structure they found on the top row, and they were wandering around Rimston. And I said my recollection was that it was the side for a garage. Well, I found it when I went up there. This is it. These houses up on the top row were... The houses were pretty high back, and you can see they had covered walkways going up to their houses. And he had the, I think I've got my pointer in the right place. He had the cement high wall, and then he had the tin garage that came out. You could not have your car up here during the winter unless you had a garage. So, and again, as you can see, they spread out. This newer addition over here, these are the ones that were built in 1949. They were also the first ones to start falling down after they were no longer heated in that. But as you can see, it was a pretty good-sized community. And like I said, they were very, very nice homes.
So would the guys drive to work then, Linda?
No, they walked.
Would they drive to work?
No. There was no place. The only vehicles that went on that side were the company vehicles.
Oh.
During the summer, we could have our cars up here park along the road, and we could go to Lucerne during the summer. It was a tavern at Lucerne.
How did you deal with 200 inches of snow?
Pardon?
How did you deal with 200 inches of snow?
Well, that would be a low snow year.
Yeah.
Well, how did you clear the roads from there?
The company cleared the roads, and the plows. That's why. The houses with garages usually belong to the cat skinners or the guys that run transportation, because when it was snowing during the night, they had to get up early and go out and be plowing, because the roads had to be open for the ore trucks to run. Winston Camp would get plowed after the commercial roads were open, after the roads from the mill through town and down to Lucerne were taken care of first, and then that. So if they weren't plowed, we walked in the deep snow. And by the way, young people today have a hard time understanding, but in those days, girls wore dresses to school.
Mm-hmm.
And so we wore leggings under our dresses and long coats over our dresses, but we walked to school in the snow.
Did you snowshoe or did you walk? I mean, did you have snowshoes?
Pardon?
Did you have snowshoes?
No, just boots.
Okay, boots.
Because it got plowed often enough that it was never deep.
Yeah.
The walkways to the house were very high up to shovel, and that's why so many people shared common walkways. And like I said, a few of those up there had their walkways covered. But it was just part of life. Of course, for me, I loved the winter because that was the most fun time to play outside in the snow.
Was there a pecking order about who lived down below or who lived above and in Winston?
In here. No, it was wherever you bought the house.
Oh.
And like when we moved, a family that lived in another house bought ours because we had a bigger house. He had four kids. And we'd had four kids. My dad had bought a house. And we'd done a remodel in our house to make more room. But so it was just wherever you bought it. Now, the other thing is, we didn't have telephones, of course. But they had a ring down, old magneto crank phone system for business operations. And they had a four service line between the company office and the dock in Chelan. And they also had one to the Washington Water Power Building in Chelan Falls because it was manned 24 hours a day, so it was an emergency phone. But they always made sure that ship bosses had an, or like on our block, the fire chief had a phone. But when he moved out, the phone was left. They always made sure there was a phone on every block. And then up in the middle of Winston Camp, there were a couple places that there was a post phone pole with a box that had a phone in it.
So you owned your house, but how about the land?
We paid the lease to the Forest Service for the land. We did not own the land.
To the Forest Service.
And that is why we didn't pay as much money for our house. And our contract said that if the mine ever closed, we would have 3 years to salvage anything we wanted from our houses, and they would be burned. That was in your contract when you bought your house. Mm-hmm. So we knew that if the mine ever closed, they would be burned. Mm-hmm. They actually waited more than 3 years. Anyway, this gives you. This is a picture from the first row. This is right past the car bridge, and the Forest Service is to the right. Now, again, one of the things you can find, this first house has a cement rock wall going up by it, and you can still find that there. Mm. And that's the block where my house is. It's hidden behind that great big tall one, which was a three-story house. The little building over here is the garage that went with our house. And this is a picture of that same block with in wintertime. That big tree in the middle is actually in our front yard. Mm-hmm. And then this is the middle row, and this, again, it gives you an idea. See, your question, see the entrance way there where the snow's been dug out of the walkway? That's what they did. You dug into your, you didn't use your back doors in the winter. Youth activities. We were very much like any other community. We had Cub Scouts and Boy Scouts. We had Bluebirds and Camp Fire Girls. This is a group of Boy Scouts getting ready to go on one of their outings. The boys from here would go out to Chelan periodically to jamborees. The Camp Fire Girls went out once a year to Wenatchee for the Grand Council Fire. It was a big event. We had to raise money. We had to stay in a hotel for two nights because it was in March. And anyway, it was a big event for us, but the community supported it. And again, like any other community, we had our activities. And of course, today in the village, they have minors and junior minors and the Narnia program for kids. So, school put on music programs every year of different types. This one was in the early 50s. We did the Frog Prince. The students would paint the scenery. Some of the costumes were made by mothers, and they were kept over the years in a costume box that was in the attic of Chalet 2, just like the village has their costume shop. We had a costume box. And also, like the village did, we made do with what you had. Now, in this particular play, the prince costume and the butler's costume were rented from Wenatchee. But the maids, the mothers took, we had been learning square dancing, so a lot of us had those square dance type dresses, Native American type dresses. So the mothers made these black cummerbunds that you can see here and here to add to our square dance dresses to make us maids for the play. By the way, Prince had dinner in Chelan Saturday night with the prince and his brother and their families, and he had caught, served fresh trout and caught out of Wapato Lake, so he's still around, and I was kind of kidding him about the, I told him I'd be talking about him when I was up here.
Where are you in that picture? Are you in any of those pictures?
Yes, I've been in several of them.
Oh, beautiful. It's time. I want to see it.
See if I can make this get back. I'll show you where I am in this picture. I actually, whoops, takes a minute to go. Actually, I was wearing one of the cummerbunds. Here I am.
Aww.
At the community Christmas tree, I was the bottom row far left. Bus arrival and departure was a very big deal in our day too, because you didn't go out very often, and you didn't have company coming in very often. And as you can see, when we went out, it was a dress-up affair. Nice coats. The guy on the right's got his sports jacket on. So our bus, not quite as elaborate, you know, not a lot of waiting and drumming and so on, but it was an important event for us.
Are your parents in the pictures?
Yeah. No, they're not in any of those pictures. The 4th of July and Labor Day weekend were holidays, were big events also. They had huge picnics. 4th of July was sponsored by the company, Labor Day by the union, paid for the food. And again, no alcohol served. I would start in the morning with the flag raising ceremony, and I'll show you a picture of the bleachers and point out where the flagpole was. And they had kids races, and the prizes that we won were our tin money. We had our own money in town, the 50 cent pieces, because we didn't have a bank. So that's what you, and they had, we'd have foot races, gunny sack races, three-legged races. Pie eating contest was one of the favorites. Now in our day we used berry pies, and I remember when we came in, one of the kids was very unhappy because my brother got the hang of it real quickly and he unseated the two-time champion. They also had log sawing and nail driving contests for the women, and they said in the 40s they had needle threading contests for the men. But those didn't last too long. They probably didn't like the idea of it. At noon was a big lunch. The picnic ground is in that area beyond the ballpark where there's now a small campground. But you can see in those days there was a big stone fireplace in the center where that yellow sign is. Mm-hmm. And as I said, I'm in this picture. I didn't even know it until somebody pointed it out to me. This is me in the brown jury jacket.
Oh,
and I choked this several times before somebody said, "Hey, that's you." Yeah. And again, that, you know, it was a big thing. The food was all served and soda pop and everything. And then, now we did not have parades in the mining days like they do in the village now. Although in the 40s, the kids said they used to decorate their bicycles and parade up to the ballpark with their decorated bicycles. In the early 50s, we had a lady, her husband was one of the cat skinners, and she'd been a majorette at Chelan High School, so she started this little baton twirling group and taught us all how to twirl batons, and our mothers made our little red skirts, and we wore white blouses, and then our hats were oatmeal boxes with fabric glued on them and yarn tassels.
Is that you in the middle?
No, actually, I'm the second from the right, not counting the gal that's cut off back there.
Did you go anywhere to perform?
Actually, we had a contest one year, and the three that won were supposed to go to Chelan High School basketball game and twirl. And there was a family that had three daughters, and the mother was so sure they'd all three win that when her daughter got third place, she wouldn't let her go, which was too bad. So Janet and I went. Janet was first place and I was second place, but we went to, which was quite intimidating because it was a rather big crowd. But it was fun. But after Margaret left, we kind of disbanded. This is the ballpark, and after lunch and after we did our little performance at the ballpark, the baseball game, and that was a big deal. because they'd play a management team against a union team. Now, during the summer, baseball was big, and there were numerous teams. Different work groups had their teams that played, and you can see how big the set of bleachers was on the far side. I can't really, but the flagpole was right over in this area, and that's where it started. And then the backstop was at the corner where the trails take off, mm-hmm. and that flat area that's slightly elevated was the parking lot, and there was also a few bleachers on that side. So, and again, in fact, they had one year that an Air Force group from Larson Air Force Base near Moses Lake came up and played and then got in to tour the mine and a lot of activities. Winter, we skied. We had a ski tow. Wow. See the rope tow?
Yeah.
The rope. If you went back to that picture, if you walked at the up through the middle row, there the last road that goes hill that goes up to the top, which had not been passable until they cleared it last year. You hadn't been able to get up there for a while. But the ski area took off from there, and they had a big foam pole at the bottom with a rim from an ore truck on it that held the bottom of the rope tow, and then the motor was mounted on a toboggan. So when there was enough snow, they'd take it up to the bottom of Martin Ridge and hook up the rope tow, and once in a while it would slide to come down, and they'd have to dig it out again. But as you can see, we had many beautiful days. In fact, in the 40s, the Boy Scouts used to have some races. Sledding, of course, was also popular. This is the most popular sledding hill. And again, because we didn't have vehicles in camp, it was pretty safe. Now, the kids that lived in the circle couldn't slide on the circle until the ore trucks were through running for the day, but they could come up and sled with us. And this is the hill that if you walk out on the road to the ballpark, this is the last road that goes up. Mm-hmm. It was a favorite sledding area. Unfortunately, by the 1950s, the ore body was running out. Copper prices were dropping. South American mines were opening up. And in April of 1957, the company announced that they would be closing on July 1. And as I mentioned, we knew that our houses would. Now, there are some people that actually dismantled their houses and hauled the lumber out and built them. There are two or three that we're aware of and built it somewhere else. But most of them were aware that once it was gone, you had your salvage time, and then they would be burned. And this is, then they kind of bulldozed the rubble around, but it's a year. And now when you go back up there with all that brush cleared out for the Wolverine fire, you can see a lot of the rock walls and steps and such again that have been kind of covered, plus there's some other artifacts that are showing. And now we have another prospector. This is a prospector of a different kind. This man's name is Wes Preeb. He saw a mining town for sale, and he started writing letters. And House Sound, of course, was not able to sell it. The last big deal that was supposed to happen, the ski resort, collapsed. And he got a call, and Holden Village became the owner of the mining property, thanks to Wes Preeb. So I call him my Holden. He's our prospector. And this are the early workmen. These people are known as the forerunners. They came on their bus, that international truck. That's how they got up here. These are young college kids. They were recruited. They came from across the nation. And if you're here for the Friday night Holden History Night that I'm going to do, I have a DVD that has a lot more detail about them because we made a DVD out of the slideshow they presented to the museum after they showed it at the reunion. Mm. Now, their clothing's a little different, but I think their conditions were more primitive. These were kind of the head people. The guy in the middle with the hat is Gil Bird. He was one of the people instrumental in closing the deal that enabled Holden to take the property. They came up and looked things over pretty good. In fact, somebody was telling me that he's the one that, looking at the buildings, back to your comment about, said the structure of the buildings was very impressive. You know, he looked at the underneath of all the buildings. The lady on the right was named Bertha. She was the cook for the group. She had a little wood stove set up behind the chalets, and then she also used the the stone fireplaces, I suspect the metal grates are long gone, but some of the chalets have stone fireplaces. She used that for the cooking. They had no hot water, no electricity, so it was really primitive. And while the early workmen were used to that sort of thing, these kids, you know, coming all over from college in 1961 were probably used to a little more comfort. The big part of their work was cleanup and repair. This guy's doing repair work on the hotel building chimney. All of the dorms still had all the beds. They had a lot of mattresses. They hung those out to dry. You can see it's got the dorm number on it. Now they're called lodges. Check under the sink where she hasn't cleaned yet.
Wow.
These places have been sitting for 4 years. You know, this was empty. In her presentation, Melba Kay says, we use many rags. This is a thing. Notice the difference between the clean window and the dirty window. And think about all those little windows that they had. And there were quite a few of them were broken. Unfortunately, there'd been vandalism up here. In fact, as soon as the building or the village took control, they kept somebody up here over the winter. They got a generator shortly after they were up here, so they started the tradition of make do with what you have, and they brought a washing machine from up out of the miners' house, one of the miners' houses, and hooked it up to wash their clothes. And they basically, during that week period, did the basics we know today. They had daily Bible study, they had work sessions, volunteer labor, they had recreation time, and they had some study sessions. They had somebody in their group that taught some nature study sessions in the afternoon. And this is them on a hike, and they also talk about they would, one afternoon they climbed Martin Ridge and had their Bible study up on Martin Ridge.
Yeah.
And this is supposed to be from their group. I'm not sure with the little children if this is some adults that came at the end or left, but anyway, they dressed up for services. And this is a picture taken from Martin Ridge of what the town site looked like and the beer tailings when they arrived.
Wow.
And this is a picture of Chalet Hill. Notice there's no trees. All those trees have grown up since. TV antenna is still there. A few people up in Holden did have TV toward the end. I visited a girlfriend's. Her folks lived on the top row and they had a TV. And her mother convinced me that that blobby thing in the middle of all that snow on the screen was Jackie Gleason.
Yeah.
it wasn't very good. The car up there, we suspect, is one that maybe somebody left behind because they didn't want to move it, take it to where they were going. When the people left, some of them took furniture, some people left stuff behind because if they were moving long distances, it was too expensive to move the furniture. And of course, in the 40s, people didn't have all the stuff in their houses we have today. This is a picture of Winston Camp as they forerunners saw it when they came, and there's a good shot of that stone wall. And then this is what it looked like after the burning, which was done in the spring of 1963. They did it when there was about 3 feet of snow left on the ground. My former husband's stepbrother actually worked on that crew. He said it was one of the hardest things he ever did in his life, burning those homes. But it was handled very safely and got rid of the fire hazards. And this is a picture of some of the houses in the middle load. The house on the left belonged to our school teacher and her husband, Mrs. Field, and they had one of the few indoor fireplaces, which is what that big stone chimney was. And you can see by 1961, the yards and everything were all grown up, but you can also tell, you see the yards. We had nice yards. Everybody had flower beds. Some had strawberry patches. And this is that middle row after the burning.
Wow.
And this is the last bridge that the company left behind that was in place when the village took over. This is Carol and Mary Hinderly, the directors who started the village and got it going. And again, they started with the basics that we know today. Very instrumental in setting the tone. The summer themes were started way back in 1965. If you're interested in reading them all, the little temporary museum up in the corner of the village center One of the cases out on the balcony, their summer themes are all posted on the edge of that case. And even, they kind of tell a story looking at them over the years. This is a picture in the early years of they used the dining hall. At this point, the posts are, the tables that were around the posts are still showing in this picture, but of course the village has since taken those out and put those round tables that makes it much easier to navigate in there. You didn't go to buffet lines during the mining days. The mess hall, when the guys were there, when the platter was empty, they held it up and it was whisked away and refilled. So they just came in and sat down and were served. And the village turned the dining hall into more than just a dining hall. This is Beanie Lundholm, and he started what some of you may have heard of Beanie Sings. He started those in the after dinner, and I think they still dig out the songbooks and sing once in a while. This is the first bridge that the village built to replace the foot bridge. And of course, they added the loading dock. Bus departure and arrival is very important, and so many people come now for the purpose of recreation. The guests come in, they needed that big loading dock to handle the luggage. This is a picture of early services in the village center, which is also, I don't remember if I mentioned, that's where we had our church services too. In the 40s, they had a visiting minister that came from Wenatchee. I'm not sure which church he was affiliated. He would come once a month, and when he was leaving to take a call somewhere else, the general manager at Curzon wrote a letter to the church and said it was really important that they replace him. And then in the 1950s, there was a young man, and he told us the story when he came to one of the reunions. He said he had started feeling a calling, and his brother-in-law was working up here, and he told him to come up, and you know, he could get a job in the carpenter shop, which he did. That's the type of did. And while he was here, the company allowed him. He held weekly church services. They were very basic Christian, non-denominational services with him singing and a sermon. And in conjunction with some of the mothers, we had some weekly Sunday school. So, and then when the mine closed and they left here, he did become ordained and become a minister. So we had our church services there too. Now the village dances are a little less formal than happening. This is the prom from 2004, and there was a fellow from Illinois helping me put this program together when we got the idea to do it. And so we didn't have a picture of a dance, and we were here while they were having the prom. He tried to get as close to the location where we think that Mining Day picture was taken, but now see, they have a variety of outfits here. Some are from the costume shop and some are from home. And I don't know if any of you know Roy and Dorothy Satry.
Yeah.
They're back here. And they were so cute. They found that it was a little two-piece taffeta outfit she found. And he found the tux. They found that in the costume shop. The green wig belongs to one of the younger people. Also, you know Terry Sanders, the mechanic that you see all the time with the dirty face?
Yeah.
You should have seen him jazzed up, and he had a real tuxedo. He had his tuxedo. Now, Quinonia was remodeled to be used for sessions, and this picture was taken before. I don't know if you know the story. The idea of the fireplace was really great, but they found that it sucked so much heat and caused so much pollution. It was not used for very many years, but the fireplace, of course, remains. The village school, actually, they have all 12 grades from K through high school. Of course, all the grades aren't filled in any given year, and this year was especially a short year. They only had 3 students this year that were here full time. They had no high school kids this year. Now, because of construction, kids, you know, haven't been in the village during the summer, so it was a little bit harder. And one of the families that left in the summer was gonna come back in the fall. There was health issues in the family. And so they did the first 6 weeks of the kids. I don't know if you're aware, last year they couldn't come back yet. When school started, they did 6 weeks of school in Chelan before they came up here. And then when the J-Term kids came from the colleges in January, February, they were here for 6 weeks. There were two of the professors' families that had kids here, so they had six additional kids during that time. But it was pretty small. But most years they have kids in all of it. This is a picture of the elementary room, and at that time it was the T room off the back. Now I know they've made some changes since these pictures were taken. Again, Christine and Scott Olson, who were the teachers at that time, sent me some pictures for their program. They were gracious enough to take some. So I have pictures of the village school. And that's a picture of Christine with, some of you may know, Pastor Ben Stewart. That was Forrest, who was a kindergartner. And Forrest was back here a couple summers ago.
Yeah, he's coming up this summer too.
He was here volunteering, and I'm going like, well, hello, little Forrest, as I'm looking up at him. And this was the high school in this year's, and I believe that's the archer's daughter. And this was graduation in 2003. Now, this is high school graduation, and it's a big deal for the village, but of course it's much more casual, and it's also unique because the graduates kind of pick their own graduation. And one year I was here, we had a graduation that started at the loading dock. We lined up behind the bongo drums and marched all the way to the third level. They had some foam blocks up there for us to sit on. If there was somebody that had a hard time walking, they took them up. And the ceremony was being conducted up there, and the person giving the graduation speech, the commencement speech, actually it wasn't the student, the speaker, was just started when one of those Whidbey jets came screaming down the valley, and she had her own personal flyby. So, and then we were here for another one, and Carolyn, Lucy isn't here, is she? I was gonna ask her, she's the current teacher. I think that was her daughter's graduation. It was a progressive one. And they came out of the room across from the fountain lunch, the graduate and then the teachers and then all of the village teachers who, you know, teach special things even though they're not on the teacher payroll. The music teacher, they had caps and gowns. The music teacher had a ballet for a hat. One guy that taught math had computer discs, and doctor taught health. He had some first aid stuff. So they came out, and there were a few words there. Then we went up Chalet Hill to the chalet where she lived, and her upper grade classmates gave her a little roast. And then we went to the dining hall, and there were some more speeches, and then we ended up in the village center where the school district people from Chelan made the official presentation. So it's a very unique event, and but like I said, very important. The community turns out just like our 8th grade graduations were. Now, they also do plays during the village years and have various types of performances. This particular picture was taken from Disney night in the 70s. And again, they can do with what you have. You can see they have these, seven dwarfs have these lovely long beards. I was up here a few years ago in the spring, and the kids were doing a play that they had actually written themselves and produced, and all of the characters were kids, except they needed a giant. Chuck Carpenter was the giant in their play for them. And of course, the pool hall has become a very family place. Wes did a lot of decorating. The jukebox has been added, and you have the game room in the back. So, but just like in the mining days, it's well used. It's used by everybody. This is a picture of a 4th of July race. 4th of July is a fun event in the village, if you've ever been here. It's very unique. And in the early days, they had foot races just like we did. There was a second picture right next to this one in the book that showed Wes Preve jumping in front of them and crossing the finish line right ahead of them. Now, on the 4th of July, the last few years I've been here, they have the marathons that they run. They also had pie eating contests back in the 70s. Now look at the, they used cream pies. Look at it dripping off the chins. Might have been easier to eat, but they were sure a lot messier. And youth activities, in the early years when Iowa first came, we still had milk cartons, and the kids made milk, they had a milk carton derby. The kids would bake their sailboats, and we'd go up to the hydro, and they'd put them in Copper Creek below the hydro, and then the winner was the one that got to the bottom. But of course, now they've had to, now they've faced maybe and things like that, different activities, because they can't do, there's no milk cartons anymore. They have the most unique parades you will ever see anywhere. All of the work groups compete to make their entry in the parade, and they frequently they use work the summer theme into their the parade they have. This was when Carol Hindley was here, and I don't remember what the theme was that year, but only the wise can see it. It had something to do about the Carol Hindley's clothes. I can't remember how it was. They, and then this is 40 years in the wilderness parade, and they had a huge band that year. But my favorite entry in that parade was the Hike House. Moses came staggering down the street. It's hot, it's dry, he fell down. They come with their little rescue gurney and pick him up, and one comes with the sign, Moses lacked the 10 essentials. That was an excellent one. The 40-year, the fellow with the skirt with the trumpet was a high school band teacher, and he organized a parade, and they had a pretty good-sized band. I forget how many instruments they were, but they also had a drill team and the baton twirler. Now, the drill team, these gals, see their pom-poms? They found these feathery plants down along the nature trail. The band is here in this picture. They're doing their Red Sea formation. Pharaoh and his chariot here, the garden part, started through the middle of the band. They separated, and he started through, and then they collapsed on him. The baton twirler's baton is truly holy. It's made from a broken pool stick. A rock from nature is adhered for balance using book tape from the library, and then it was decorated with cloth from the sewing room. And yeah, 50 years later, there's that 10-year-old twirling the baton. You saw her in the mining day. It was fun. I had no idea. I did a little bit in high school, and I was in the bookstore, and she said, I heard the conversation, that we need a majorette. And I turned around and looked at her, and she said, do you know how to twirl a baton? I said, it's been 40 years, you know. But I went out, it's like a bicycle, it comes back, but I had fun making the baton, so it's fun. And again, it's such fun, they're so creative. Another entry in 40 years in the wilderness, the laundry had two poles they carried, and I don't know where they found the old bloomers and stuff, but they started with old bloomers, and they had ladies' underwear all the way up to a thong. Summer wouldn't be summer without a picnic. I should mention, you know, 4th of July picnic, they also have them regularly during the summer. But the village has one thing that we never had on the 4th of July, and that is their fireworks. Oh, yeah, if you've ever been here, it's a lot of fun. You go into the VC, have Vespers, and then you bring your flashlights. They show bursting fireworks on the slide, play music, and they pass out bubble wrap for you to pop. It's really happy. 4th of July. And their winter skiing is also a very important part of their recreation, but of course they do cross-country skiing. Now this is showing some of the changes, whoops, that went kind of fast, taken place as it's changed from retreat center. Let's see if I can go. You know, the flower beds were added in the early 60s. Gertrude Lundholm and some ladies. A lot of the irises you see down here were transplanted from the miners' homes in Winston Camp. They spent 2 months, she told me about it, they spent 2 months hauling those irises down in garden carts. And I don't know if you, any of you were here in the years. For a while, they had those flower boxes out here along the rock wall, but I think they were too hard to keep up and got in the way of other industrial work. But adding the flower beds and stuff around the village is transitioning it from, you know, a mining village to a retreat center. And then here's another current service with the ceiling painted. Mm-hmm. And the tile cross isn't showing in this picture, but they've got that addition too. And here's the bridge that brought us into the 21st century. And now I have to start getting pictures and working on, because supposedly by the end of this construction season, there will be another bridge, a crossroad replacing. But let's hope that it will be there to bring many more generations of people to Holden Village. It's truly a unique place. I love this place. There's no place like it. And yet, as you can see, one of the reasons the kids that come back for the reunions from the mining days will tell you, it was a great place to be a kid. The first time I came back for a reunion, I got off the bus and I saw all these kids, happy kids playing, and I said, ah, just not our days. And so there are a lot of similarities between the two communities, and I like people to understand that we were an all-American community, and you people are very familiar at functions. You have your youth just as we did. And there's a lot of similarities between the two, and that's one of the things I've enjoyed about coming back.
Who was Winston? Why was your town?
Winston was named after the construction company that built a lot of the buildings here.
Oh.
And I think they also were involved in building some of the homes up there. So that's how it got its name, Winston.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you.